Hello, you're listening to Niecy's HealthWise. The Professional Supplement Center sponsors Niecy's HealthWise. The Professional Supplement Center is an independently owned business with an on-staff consultative nurse. They carry a full line of vitamins, supplements, and other natural products which are shipped all over the country. The Professional Supplement Center is located at 5441 Palmer Crossing Circle in Sarasota. Or, for more information, their website is ProfessionalSupplementCenter.com. That's ProfessionalSupplementCenter.com. Dr. Catherine Clements, ND, LNT, is a naturopathic physician specializing in natural and nutritional support for individuals diagnosed with autism spectrum disorder, sensory integration disorder, and developmental delay. Her other specialties include digestive issues, immune support, and hormone balancing. Dr. Clements graduated with a doctorate in naturopathic medicine from Bastyr University and is also a licensed massage therapist. She was listed in Jenny McCarthy's book, Mother Warriors, and as a Defeat Autism Now practitioner. She's also a grant provider for Generation Rescue. Locally, she has won awards for Best Women's Healthcare Practitioner and Instructor of Distinction, and co-directs Thrive, an award-winning wellness center in Sarasota, Florida. Dr. Clements is also a full-time faculty member in the Alternative Medicine Program at Everglades University and provides continuing education programs to professionals. Welcome to the show, Catherine.
Thank you for having me, Niecy. I appreciate being here to speak about this very important topic.
Well, that's what HealthWise is all about. We want to inform and help the public find out about things that can help them get better and better with integrative alternative therapies. So, Catherine, let's start out. You're here to talk about autism and alternative therapies that can help autistic children in particular. Let's start out with the definition of autism. What is autism?
Well, autism, according to the diagnostic label and the diagnostic manual for autism, includes dysfunctions in things like behaviors, repetitive behaviors, developmental delay, difficulty with social interaction, and there's a number of different, that's why it's called a spectrum, because there's a number of different things that children suffering from autism may be experiencing, and it's not always the same for one child. It may be different for one child diagnosed with autism than another child.
So when you say sensory disorder, how exactly does that relate to autism?
Well, sensory disorder is currently not a diagnosis. They're actually trying and have been trying to have it accepted as a diagnostic label because so many children, both with autism and what we call neurotypical children, which are not labeled with autism, have sensory issues where, for instance, they might have difficulty with loud noises or haircuts or the feeling of their clothes on their body, or even taking in of information and being able to get the correct information back out. There's an issue with processing their senses in their body.
So that would be sight, touch, smell, taste. Those are the senses you're talking about.
Yes, those five senses that we normally think of, and also things called proprioception and vestibular, which have to do with where our body is in space, have to do with balancing, feeling our own body. So sometimes children, for instance, will seem clumsy or be bumping other children or bumping into the walls often, and it's because they don't have a correct sense of balance or where their body is in space. So those are the two extra senses, which most people don't know about. We don't learn about those in school,
no.
But they're very, very important.
I'll say, particularly you're the one that's bumping into things.
Exactly. Or if you're the child that unfortunately might be getting in trouble at school because you're bumping into someone in line, and really it's just because your body isn't processing information as well as it could.
Oh, good example. Thank you. What are the causes of autism? Do we know?
We don't know. Science does not quite know what the cause of autism is, but in my experience and in my personal opinions, I think it is multifactorial, and there are many things that are causing the child with autism's body to dysfunction. And some of those things could be higher levels of toxins in the body that they're exposed to from the environment. It could be gut imbalances. It could be food sensitivity. So there are a number of things that can cause irritation, imbalance, disease to the body that then affect the child's ability to develop appropriately.
And so when you speak about toxins, are you talking about what's in the environment, pesticides, chemicals in our foods, which is a favorite of mine. Not really a favorite, a favorite topic.
Favorite topic, yeah.
Are those the types of things you're talking about when you talk about toxicity?
Really, toxicity is such a wide, wide topic because, of course, there has been a link with parents for many years saying that vaccines may be an issue and that they see some of their children changing after certain rounds of vaccination. So that's a very controversial topic, but certainly one that many parents stand behind. So there are certain components in the vaccines like thimerosal and now aluminum that are heavy metals that could be considered, they are considered toxins, could be affecting the brain and development. But we're not just talking about that. I don't like to just get hung up on that because there's so many other toxins in our environment. There's a recent study called the Body Burden Study where they looked at the blood of newborns right upon birth, and they found that newborns, even before they were born, were exposed to over 200 chemicals in utero.
Oh, I read that.
Yeah, not because their moms are bad people or making bad choices. No, it's because of everything that I'm sure you talk about on your show that's out there in the environment.
That's in the environment, mm-hmm. Exactly. It seems that autism has risen in recent decades. Are there statistics to support that?
There certainly are. In fact, just last week, many of our listeners might have seen on TV, because it was on all of the major news stations, that the new studies indicate that the rates for autism are 1 in 50 children.
Wow.
Can you believe that? To make that more real for all of us, if you think about all the school buses that are driving around in the mornings picking up our children, that works out to one child on every school bus in our nation would be diagnosed with autism.
That's horrible. And has there been an incline or an increase?
Has been. The last rates, which were released, I believe, 2 years ago, were 1 in 88, and prior to that, 110. And even as far back as in 1975, the rates were only one child in 5,000.
So something's changing. It's either our food or the toxins in the environment or a combination of all of those things, preservatives, etc.
Right. A lot of times the information that's put out will say, oh, we're just diagnosing it better, or we're asking better questions, which I think is true. I think it's much more known. People know much more about it. Doctors know much more about it. We have better ways of diagnosing, and we ask more questions. And parents come forward because they're more aware of it. But I don't think that explains a more than 600% increase in diagnosis of autism. There's something else going on.
I think that's true. And, you know, when I think back to my childhood, I went to school in New York. So I went to very large schools and knew hundreds and hundreds of children. And yet, throughout all of my education through high school, I only remember ever seeing one autistic child.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, at the time, I didn't know that that child was autistic, but the behavior was so peculiar that it was very noticeable. Now, looking back, I know that it was autism. Well, how odd that I went to schools in a major metropolitan area, only knew one child, and now one on every school bus.
Mm-hmm.
Is afflicted with autism. And by the way, are those worldwide statistics or
those
just
are
in the
American
States?
Statistics, but there are statistics from other countries. I believe, for instance, in North Korea, I believe the statistics are 2.6%, which is basically about 1 in 50 as well. There are some other countries where the statistics still are indicating about 1 in 100. So there is variability, but it's everywhere.
Okay, so that again would indicate that it's something environmental,
right,
rather than just better diagnostic and scientific tools and applications.
And even a lot of times the conversation is genetics. How much genetics play a role? Is there a genetic cause? And certainly with any illness, with any disease process, with any developmental issue, there can be a genetic predisposition. So I don't want to say that it is all just environment, but a genetic predisposition does not at all explain the increase in rates as well.
What are some of the symptoms of autism? If I were a parent, what would I be looking for if my child weren't bumping into walls? What are some of the other signs I'd be looking for?
Right. A lot of times what parents may notice first, and once again, this is a very individual process, so it's different for every child, but there is likely to be some type of developmental delay. So delay in speech. Perhaps the child isn't hitting the milestones that pediatricians check for in those well child visits, either in motor development, which would be crawling late, walking late, or speech development, or perhaps they are speaking at one point and then they lose their speech. We see that with children as well.
Really?
We also might see no eye contact or loss of eye contact, not answering to the child's name, not being aware of the environment around them, not responding appropriately to the environment around them.
But surely children who are shy don't make eye contact. So how would I distinguish as a parent whether that was normal or potentially abnormal behavior?
Well, once again, we usually see an umbrella set of symptoms. Once again, different amongst children, but there's usually more than one symptom. And in fact, to be actually diagnosed, you have to have a minimum of 6 symptoms off the list that they use to diagnose with. So you're going to see some type of global delay, either or in language, motor development, communication, social development, so not playing appropriately with other children, for instance, or not playing at all with other children. Some of those repetitive behaviors like lining up of cars or repetitive words, repetitive sounds, repetitive actions. There's often some what we call perseverative or repetitive behavior as well. So sometimes the signs and symptoms are subtle and parents don't know or parents are suspicious and they ask and they're told, oh, well, just wait a little bit longer because children do develop at different times.
Sure.
But we are getting better at identifying and diagnosing early. In fact, many cases of autism are diagnosed around 18 months to 3 years and sometimes even earlier now.
If you just tuned in recently, I'm interviewing Dr. Catherine Clements regarding autism, principally in children. What are some of the standard Western medical treatments before we get on to the holistic alternative ones? What are some of the Western medical treatments?
Well, most of the more conventional Western medical treatments in the past and still currently have been to refer to a speech therapist or an occupational therapist, a behavioral therapist, and these are all very important and all very necessary in my opinion.
What might we expect to see results-wise from a behavioral therapist, let's say in a child who doesn't make eye contact or in a child that doesn't want to play with other children? How would they approach that child behaviorally?
Well, that's, of course, not my specialty, so I will try to speak to that as best as I can.
But
generally, for the different therapies, they will work with either retraining the child or helping the child be more comfortable, more appropriate in their environment. There's a number of different systems, cues, and tools that can be used just depending on where the child is limited.
Now let's get into some of the holistic alternative things. First of all, I want to start with diet. Do you think that diet is related to autism in any way?
I
should say the reverse. Is autism related to diet?
Yes, I think everything's related to diet.
Actually, I did a lot of things.
We are what we eat, and it's true for all of our children and all of us as adults. And with children that have been diagnosed on the autism spectrum or even children that have sensory disorder issues, my experience has been that there are often, and I would probably say 90% of the time, and that's just my own experience, children have some dietary issues, and that can go one of two ways. Either they aren't getting the nutrition necessary because they have a limited diet, usually of their own choosing, not because mom and dad don't try their best. It's often the child is choosing either because of their sensory issues or something else to not eat certain foods. So then they're not getting the nutrition they need.
Right.
So that's going to affect our brains. That's going to affect our development. So that's one side of it. The other side is potential foods that might be irritating to the system.
Like?
sugar, so we all know what it feels like. Right. We all know what sugar feels like if we eat a whole bunch of it. But sugar, other what we call excitotoxins, meaning they're very excitatory to the brain and can sometimes even be toxic to the neurons. So those are things like artificial sweeteners, artificial dyes, preservatives, and many of those things are added to our foods, especially our processed foods. And then there's food sensitivities.
That could be anything, peanuts.
It could. There are some common ones like gluten and dairy, and you'll hear in the autism community a lot of discussion about the gluten-free, casein-free diet. Casein's a protein from dairy. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of discussion about that, but you never truly know if those are the exact food sensitivities, or there may be anything. It could be soy, it could be peanuts, it could be a vegetable or a fruit, although that's rare.
So you really have to be an investigative parent and very observant in order to determine if your child has food sensitivities if they haven't been tested.
Right, and it's often very hard both as a parent or even as a healthcare practitioner because food sensitivities are not the same as food allergies. It's not the same as having swelling or an anaphylactic reaction to a food. In fact, food sensitivities
and that would be an allergy.
Right, that would be an allergy, and that would be like a peanut or shellfish allergy. And food sensitivities are never life-threatening. They are a type of immune system dysfunction where the body is actually reacting negatively to the food, but they aren't life-threatening. So that's a food sensitivity, and those can happen anywhere up to 72 hours after eating the food.
So it might be bloating, for example, might be a food sensitivity.
Right, well, that might be one of the symptoms that's experienced. It might be gut symptoms like bloating or constipation or excess gas, or it might even be brain fog or as if the child's in another world, like as if they're not really in the same world
spacey.
With us.
Exactly. What we call spacey.
Exactly. So it can be throughout the body in different places, and it can happen many days after eating the food. So if the child's eating the food a couple times a week, a parent wouldn't necessarily say, oh, my child ate this food and had this reaction. So they're hard to figure out.
Does it appear as though autistic children are more susceptible to food sensitivities than other children, or do we not have any statistics on that?
I don't know of any direct statistics on that. What I do know is there's been some research on a particular part of our human genome that seems to be more of a problem in children that are later diagnosed with autism. And that particular part of the human genome doesn't allow them to detoxify well. Things like heavy metals. And so they're more prone or more susceptible to being, what we might say, more toxic.
Gotcha.
Toxicity affects the gut.
Okay.
So now we have this link between toxicity, gut imbalance, which leads us to be more susceptible to food sensitivities.
Well, let's just go straight to the question I'm dying to ask. What are the ways that you can treat autism holistically?
Okay, so, and I just want to say that I, as a naturopathic physician, do not treat autism, but I support the dysfunctions of the system in children that are diagnosed with autism. So I look at many different things. I look at food sensitivities. I look at gut balance and gut health and trying to heal the gut. I look at neurotransmitters, which are like the hormones of the brain, and that is a fascinating topic and very
complex. The brain has hormones?
Yes, the brain makes all these things that we call neurotransmitters, but they're sort of like hormones, and they guide how we perceive the world, how we interact with the world, and they guide our moods and our behavior as well. And so those can get out of balance, just like in someone who's feeling a little bit depressed or a little bit anxious. That's all because of neurotransmitters and inappropriate balances of them. Same thing with some of the behavioral issues or the sensory issues we see in some of our kids, whether they're on the autism spectrum or not. So that's a whole nother very complex and interesting realm. And these are all different functional areas that we can work on, meaning areas in the body that are dysfunctioning that affect how our child's brain and body develops. And that's what autism is a developmental issue.
Okay, and how would you find these underlying disorders?
Well, how I will work to find those things out is I spend a lot of time in appointments with people, and I want to hear the story. I don't want to just hear it for 5 minutes. I want to hear it for an hour and a half. I want to hear about that child from pregnancy all the way up until the minute they're sitting in my office, because so much of that story is like a puzzle. And when we see all the different puzzle pieces, we can put them together and understand the underlying imbalances. But we can also test for some of these things as well. So there are what we call functional tests or alternative tests that are not FDA approved for diagnosis. They're not done at Quest or LabCorp, but they give us very important functional information about what's happening or not happening in the body.
Like what? What type of functional test?
For instance, that we can look at gut health by doing a specific type of stool test that looks at, are there enough of the healthy bacteria? I'm sure you've talked about probiotics at some point on your show.
Yes.
So are there enough of those healthy guys living down there for the gut to be balanced and to be doing its job? Is there something invading the gut and disbalancing it or imbalancing it, like a yeast or a bacteria that shouldn't be there? And if there is, how do we get rid of it? And that can all be tested by doing a sensitivity. We can look at digestive parameters. Is the digestive system breaking down meat fibers, vegetable fibers, so that the nutrition is available? So this is a special test that's done through collecting stool sent out to a special laboratory, and then it gives us, actually the test results are usually 8 or 9 pages in length, that gives us a ton of information about that specific child and how we can address that specific child's imbalances.
Thank you. That was a very comprehensive answer. I wanted to underline something that you said there, Catherine. And that is, you want to sit down with the parent and the child for 1.5 hours. How many of your doctors, and I'm talking to my audience here, how many of your doctors have sat down with you for 1.5 hours to help diagnose, understand, discover, whatever terminology you choose to use, what is wrong with you? You're lucky if you get 15 minutes. So this is another reason that naturopathic medicine is so important to me, because naturopathic doctors spend time with their patients. They're not on a 5 to 15 minute schedule. They're not solely based on the bottom line. Of course, they have to make a profit as anyone else does, but they're not solely based on the bottom line as so many practices are today. So I think that's very, very important. Okay, the next question I want to ask you is, when you treat an autistic child, because they may have a sensory disorder where they don't want to be touched or they don't want to be in proximity to other people, how is treating them different than treating other children? What is your approach that is different than treating another child?
That is a fabulous question. So, first of all, in many ways, it's not different because I'm a mom. I have children. I work with children all the time in many different ways. And it comes from our heart when we work with children.
Uh-huh.
And so there are some similarities of just having an open heart and being present with the child, even if it seems like the child with autism isn't present with you.
Mm-hmm.
Being present with the child and trying to understand the family story is so important and so helpful. But, of course, also, you know, I have children that might come into my office and scream for 1.5 hours because of their sensory issues or because that's just their only way to communicate, just like a baby when it doesn't have words. That's the way a baby
right.
communicates
right.
when you don't have words. And so sometimes my office is a little hectic, and that's perfectly fine.
Okay.
And in terms of treatment, or in my case, supporting the child, it's more that it's just so complex. And that my job really is to spend that time and be a detective, a caring, compassionate detective, and find out the puzzle pieces and put them together to help the families and the child.
And one last question. Does it take more time then for you to get through to that child and work with that child than it might another child?
Well, yes, because many of us in the autism community will say it's not a sprint, it's a marathon, and you need to be ready for the marathon, because this isn't something that we have a magical pill for.
Okay, excellent. And so I'd like everyone to keep that in mind, that when you're looking for alternative help for your child with an autistic disorder, that you need to be in it for the long haul. It might take longer than you would like, but in the end, I think you'll get the results you're looking for. Well, this has been a fascinating show. Thank you very much, Catherine. It's all we have time for today. If you'd like more information about the holistic treatment of autism, you can reach Dr. Clemens at area code 941-951-6820. That's 941-951-6820. Or her website is Aurora, A-U-R-O-R-A, auroratherapeutics.com. I'm Nisi Carbone, encouraging you to tell your friends about Nisi's HealthWise. If you missed any portion of today's show or would like to hear archived episodes, you can find them on toyourhealth.podomatic.com. That's toyourhealth.podomatic.com. In the meantime, here's to your health.